Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
What's up, everybody? I'm John.
And I'm Kevin.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down.
Welcome back, everyone, to the podcast. We are pleased as punch to have Kevin's friend Kyle with us.
Hi, Kyle.
Hi. Yes. No one should have to go through this alone.
Everyone needs a friend.
Or even with one companion.
Yeah, we are each other's support group at this point.
I kid, because I'm enjoying this movie and this podcast so far. Yeah. We're talking about Masters of the Universe.
And this is episode 2 in our series of, I will admit, a much beloved movie from my childhood that stems from a deep and abiding love that I had for the cartoon and all the action figures. And that was a big part of my, you know, everyday life outside of school was playing with those things. So.
Me too. They were the only action figures I had. Like, everyone else was playing, like, Transformers and G.I. Joe and all that. It's like a blind spot for me, man. It was He-Man up until
He-Man, lots of He-Man, a few G.I. Joes. Mm-hmm. I played with something called Starcom. Do you remember anything called Starcom?
Not.
It was space toys or whatever. Okay. They were pretty rad, though. I don't know if they had a cartoon or not, but I thought we could take a moment to reflect on the origins of He-Man.
Let us pray.
So, He-Man, created by Mattel as a toy line.
Right.
They wanted an action figure toy. They had passed on Star Wars.
Genius. What a great move.
So, they had then tried to make up for that by making deals with, like, to have Flash Gordon toys or Clash of the Titans toys and Battlestar Galactica toys.
Interesting.
And they all bombed. And they realized we should just make our own thing that we own, you know, the creative to. Now they're Mattel, they're internal research. So what little boys wanted were big muscles and power.
This was the 1980s, after all.
Of course, man. So He-Man was sort of inspired by the Conan the Barbarian aesthetic,
right?
Is there a more misogynistic name for a character ever
than He-Man?
He-Man.
Had to really hammer it in there. It is, though. It sticks in your head, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's effective.
It's catchy.
For, like, a 10-year-old boy?
Oh, sure.
He-Man.
Yeah, no, it's the perfect power fantasy, like, for a little kid. Yeah.
I mean, Superman was taken already.
Our listeners at home would not know it, but, like, the way that Kevin just said it, it was, like, sort of a reverse uppercut. He-Man! Like,
pump that fist.
Yeah, baby, you have to.
So the toys dropped early in 1982, right about the same time that the Conan movie came out.
Perfect timing.
It was great timing. It was, like, instantly popular. The original toys, they were packaged with little comic books, which I do not recall. That's where, like, the storytelling began.
Their excuse for, like, how they had, like, you know, a character that looks like a skeleton or a skunk or Beast Man.
And they felt like, how are kids supposed to play with this? Like, what's the story? Like, what is everyone's motivation? What's the world like? What's going on here? So then they realized they think they could do even better with a cartoon series.
Right.
So that followed in fall of 1983. It was basically just a way to market the toys.
Right.
Right? So genius, because I think you weren't allowed to... There was some sort of rule, like, you couldn't advertise toys during certain hours, or you could only advertise so much. And they're like, well, what if we just did a whole show that's all one long
ad? That's genius!
They're like, no laws against that.
That guy got a raise.
Dude.
And a promotion.
Absolutely. So, like, that whole of the Prince Adam alter ego and all that was a creation of the series.
Right.
It's obviously missing from the film.
Right.
They were also, I don't remember this from the show, but they were like the humor and like morality lessons at the end of the show, like G.I. Joe style. I don't recall that in He-Man, just watching it, but apparently they were in there.
That was like every cartoon of the 80s, though.
Yeah.
Like they had, they just to get past like standards and practices, they had to have like a lesson for kids.
You're like busting heads for, for 20 minutes. Then at the end, you're like, and don't do drugs or whatever it is. G.I. Joe also like relaunched right about this same time with the same sort of formula, like a series and a new line of toys and the little morality lessons at the end, which I fucking love, the G.I. Joe show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's funny, though, Kevin. I was thinking about this because you mentioned Conan the Barbarian, and I'm like, there was like a small stretch of time where Barbarian stuff was like, sword and sorcery was like at its apex within sort of pop culture. Like
Golden Axe.
Yeah, and like, what was it? Ator the Fighting Eagle. I don't know if you ever saw that. Or, you know, of course, Beastmaster, the actual masterpiece of the genre.
That was the first ever podcast that John came on, was when we broke down Beastmaster.
Oh, what a joy.
Amazing. Which was obviously, yeah, Conan, I think, was at the crest of that wave. Yeah. Or even the Excalibur movie,
which
was fucking rad.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that.
I mean, maybe Clash of the Titans is sort of the genesis point of all of that.
True.
But it's just, it's interesting that like there was a small sliver of time where shirtless muscle men captured America's hearts. I mean, maybe most of them were flops,
and we never looked back.
Right.
Yeah. No, it was amazing to me. Yeah. It isn't so much of life in general. It's just timing. Like we were at the right place at the right time with the right idea and caught lightning in a bottle or whatever.
Yeah. 100%.
There was, then She-Ra followed.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a toy
He-Man
line.
For Girls.
He-Man for Girls launched in 84. They had their own series, TV show that came out in 85 and has been reborn on Netflix, right? Now, the brand by 1987 had kind of plateaued, and they thought, okay, we're going to do a movie. It's going to like re-energize the brand. Didn't really work out that way. The movie like just strayed far from the mythos and the look.
Yeah,
of the cartoon as well.
One would probably argue the movie may have killed the franchise, actually.
I think it did more harm than good, right?
For certain.
They said it caused a further decline, really, in the brand. Then they tried to... Mattel, like, relaunched He-Man in space in 1989, which I do not remember.
I vaguely remember.
I think I had moved on to other toys. I was, like, one of the lost
I was heavy
customers.
Ninja Turtles at that point.
Dude, Ninja Turtles.
I had an action figure of the He-Man New Adventures, and it was like they gave him blue pants... and they cut his hair.
Yeah, they gave him an updated look.
Yeah, he didn't have like the page boy haircut
anymore.
The
feathered hair.
Yeah, he had like just like straight back, sort of shorter hair, and like he had like one sort of like thing across his chest.
I think I remember that too.
Yeah. It was like sci-fi He-Man, as you say.
Yeah,
but, like, I never saw an episode of the cartoon at all, but I had one of the toys.
They've relaunched again and again over the years with various reboots. I think there's a new...
And they're about to do it again.
A
Kevin
new one
Smith.
Coming in
a
couple weeks.
Is it Kevin Smith?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
I'm actually excited about it. It looks, the voice talent is like, it's an all-star cast.
Did they? Who's on it?
All right, so let's start from the top. So... I have no idea who's He-Man, but I know
Chris Wood. He was on Supergirl. He played a character called Mon-El. So there you go.
Okay.
Lena Headey is in it.
Who is she?
Lena Headey was Cersei.
Well, I mean, I know who she is, but who is she playing?
This doesn't say. So I'm going to guess she's Evil Lyn.
She's got the evil persona down, Pat.
Who else? Sarah Michelle Gellar is Teela.
Yep.
It's cool.
You know,
Skeletor, guys, bring it.
Yeah,
you have to give that tidbit out.
Kyle. Oh, that's Mark Hamill, who I'm sure
voice talent as well. His Joker.
Oh, yeah. Sure, yeah,
it's so good. Everyone loves it. So that's not a bad lineup. And then Kevin Smith helming it. So I think it's something to look forward to. Anyway,
do we think it's going to be for adults or for kids or both?
Both.
They're trying to make that. They're trying to hit that Cobra Kai demographic.
I hope that Kevin Smith, after all the many lessons he's learned as a comic book lover and filmmaker, that he knows that you got to do both.
A little nostalgia.
A little nostalgia will, you know, keep the ardent fans, but you've got to also appeal to a younger crowd.
Guys, I got to tell you, I just saw Henry Rollins is playing Triclops.
Yes.
Tony Todd, the Candyman himself, is playing a character called Scareglow, which is not one I'm familiar with.
He was a skeleton almost exactly like Skeletor, but he didn't have a hood, and he glowed in the dark.
Hell yeah. I'm into it.
We had that action figure.
And the best casting of all of this for me, playing Cringer, the cat, yes. Is Steven Root.
Ooh, that's fucking awesome.
Did the cat straight up talk? Like, did he speak English or did he just make noises?
No, he spoke English. Cringer did. Battlecat did not speak English, but Cringer did.
Yeah. Steven Root, that's awesome, dude. No. I'm here for all of this. Okay, now I'm more excited than I was 5 minutes ago.
It's going to be good.
Anyway, we got a movie to talk about here.
Yes.
A little Masters of the Universe. It's smart that they didn't call it the He-Man movie because he's really... He's missing in action for three quarters of the film.
I wonder if there was more shot with him in it, and it got cut.
I think Dolph Lundgren was not the actor that they thought he was.
That he thought he was.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense that Cannon would do that. Like, because this is the same company that put out like the Barbarian Twins movie and like all kinds of shit like that. So it would be weird unless they just thought, wow, this really isn't working at all.
Yeah. I think, and they probably, I don't know what they paid him, but it was probably pretty decent money.
Sure.
If they had him attached, like, before they started casting anyone else or got a director lined up. Anyway.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So I guess before we get started on this second episode, we'll get caught up on what happened the last time. So the movie picks up with Skeletor has just invaded Castle Grayskull with his army. He's taken over. He's claimed that he's in charge of everything now, and outside the good guys are mowing some bad guys down. That includes He-Man, Teela, and Man-at-Arms. They rescue a gremlin named Gwildor, who come to find out invented the cosmic key. So they use the tunnels in Gwildor's house, which inexplicably lead to Grayskull, find the sorceress, try to rescue her to no avail. Skeletor comes in, all hell breaks loose. Oh, also come to find out Gwildor had the prototype cosmic key, which he brought with him. And then just as they're all about to be captured, they use it. Gwildor starts punching buttons at random. They end up on planet Earth somehow. Skeletor says to track the key to find out where they went. But back to Earth, He-Man and the good guys find that their version of the cosmic key somehow got lost, and they're all setting out to find it and figure out what the fuck happened.
Well, now...
Chapter 2,
we pick up...
Verse 1.
Exterior, Robbie's Ribs and Chicken.
I love an old drive-in.
Dude, I love the look of this place.
Yeah, me too.
It was the exact type of place I want to eat when I'm on a road trip.
Yeah.
Whatever. Fucking awesome. So we got Julie, that's Courtney Cox. She's inside. She's running the register, dressed in Western attire.
Complete with a gun belt and pistol.
She had holsters on. She was not wearing the cowboy hat that the others were wearing. Little tiny cowboy hat. I thought she looked like something out of a David Lynch movie or something.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
He's
yeah.
like so good at finding these fresh-faced, like impossibly gorgeous women to turn up in his things. And it's like, I've never seen this person
she
before.
Would, I mean, yeah, she could... Like, she definitely could have been on Twin Peaks. Like,
yeah.
Replace Sherilyn Flynn or something like that. Like,
absolutely. That yeah. or, like, Laura Dern out of Blue Velvet
totally.
Or whatever.
Good call.
So, yeah, the theme, apparently, of the restaurant is country western. yeah, they're rocking whatever.
Gingham shirts and shit.
Gingham shirts, guns.
Blue jeans.
Cowboy hats, bandanas around the neck. I would eat at this place, though.
Oh, yeah dude. I'd never had ribs before when I saw this movie, and it made me want to have ribs. Watching it yesterday, it made me want to have ribs.
Me too.
Did you get to ribs quickly in your life after the movie, or did it take a long time?
It took a while, I guess.
Ribs, to me, are like chicken wings. It's a lot of effort for a small reward.
Yeah. It's worth it.
It just depends on where you get them from. I've had some in Memphis that are like dry rub. It's the best stuff I've ever had.
Ooh. I'm just not going to the right ribs places here.
Anyway, with Fat Matt's.
Yeah?
It's a good place.
Okay.
Piedmont.
So, inside Robbie's, we got Julie. She's looking wistful. She reveals that she's clocking out for her last time at Robbie's. Her friend is there. She reveals that she's about to move to Jersey.
She's moving there to be with Bruce Springsteen.
Did they ever like reveal like who she's going to move with?
I have a lot of questions about like, all this that we're gonna talk about, but
we're gonna have
it's like...
No one plans to move to Jersey, so you know something went wrong. You know something's gone wrong.
Someone that hasn't even graduated from high school yet is planning to move to New Jersey.
That's my read, but she talks about I'm going to miss graduation, but So we think that is definitively means she's a senior.
Yeah.
Right now.
It has to be.
I was hoping that she's older because that her being that young makes just so little makes sense now.
Agreed. Because also later on, Kevin says, I'm in a high school garage band. And I'm like, fuck.
But they both look 25.
Yeah, everyone looks older. Anyway, yeah, she's definitely moving there to be with the bus.
To join the E Street.
That's right.
So her friend tells her that if she breaks up with Kevin, she's going to regret it.
That's terrible advice. Also, did you catch
it? Well, no. No one should ever break up with Kevin.
No, that's true. That's also true. The friend's name is Monica.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I did not catch the friend's name.
Yeah, the friend's name is Monica.
She had like a Linda Hamilton Terminator vibe to me, the friend. The hairstyle and everything was just that mid-80s perm, whatever
it was. How could you tell with that hat?
So Julie is telling Monica then that they both changed, that everything has changed. Speaking of changing, Julie's like changing clothes right in the middle of the kitchen.
Yeah.
And like, that's got to be against health code.
Right. Robbie's is a very small place.
It is. Her friend's pointing out, well, you still love each other. That's a valid point she's making. At the same time that she's just like pounding a drumstick.
Yeah.
She was inhaling that thing.
Yeah, I'm envious.
Now, Julie, she just says she doesn't want to burden Kevin with her problems. Her friend says, you know, you don't have to move, that your parents would have wanted you to stay.
How the fuck does Monica know all this? Like, what do you know about her parents? And also, where are her parents?
Like, we assume, it sounds like something bad has happened.
Yeah.
Right? Julie says she's going to move 3,000 miles away for a fresh start.
For with who?
I don't know.
I keep thinking it's like she's got family. She has to
but that's never
cousin.
Spoken.
No, yeah, it's never said.
There's never mention of an aunt or anything. I mean,
you got to give us something.
Like, why not move to... And that's another thing is that we sort of establish is that, like, must come from a wealthy family to be 18 years old to just be taking whatever money she's got and just move all the way across the country.
It raises so many questions. First is what's going on with Julie's denim jacket. That thing has got hot. Like just dozens of metal studs, like the buttons from a pair of blue jeans all over. It's got like that leather patch that you get on the waist up around the collar. It's fucking rad. It had belt loops on the collar.
You pay top dollar for that now.
You think?
No.
But back in that day, I bet it was like the shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a car honks outside. It's Kevin. She's come to pick Julie up. Kevin and his cargo van are waiting out there. It's the same exact shot that was in the Establisher. Like, in the Establisher, the van was sitting there as well. Even the same customers were walking back and forth, so I'm like, they clearly stole a piece of that and used it.
Right.
There's a certain cool factor, I think, in having a van like that back in the 80s.
Oh, definitely.
It's like the Shaggin' Wagon or whatever.
Yeah. It reminds me of Styles in Teen Wolf.
Van. Or, In Fast Times at Ridgemont High, dude was rocking a van. The dude playing Kevin, Robert Duncan McNeil, he looked like some type of a hybrid of like every 80s teen idol. Like if you took him into a laboratory, it was like Anthony Michael Hall plus Jason Bateman with a little Andrew McCarthy.
Well, you know what's funny is I was watching this movie, I was like, I know I've seen that guy in something else.
Had you?
Yeah, he was on every episode of Star Trek Voyager.
Okay. I never watched those.
It's terrible.
It would have been 10 years later as well or something?
Yeah, it was in the mid-90s. He played a character called Lieutenant Paris. And then, now he's like a producer of TV shows. He like helped create Chuck and a number of other shows that are, you know, debuting here and there. He's a big wig now.
He was bumping the song Living in a Box by the band Living in a Box.
Their self-titled single.
Bizarre. Right. Julie gets in with a bucket of food, and she asks Kevin...
She's a keeper, man.
Yes. Kevin asks, when's your bus to the airport, which I feel like he should know
already.
He would already
know that.
She says it's at 8:30, and he's happy because that will allow her to come and check out his sound check.
Oh, God, you guys. That shit is lame. That's lame.
That's how every girl wants to spend her last few hours together.
To her shit boyfriend.
It's insane. She passes in that bucket of ribs, which he points out isn't a romantic last date meal.
Neither is taking her to your sound check, jackass. Like,
this is like, he's... Dude, the dude's an asshole.
Yeah. And he's obviously butthurt that she's leaving.
This dude who like literally just asked her to come to his sound check. There's this long, awkward silence after he gave that line about it not being romantic. And you really just notice that the terrible 80s pop song is playing in there, which I will use on these episodes. On first viewing, I thought the audience was supposed to think that he's an asshole. Like, because he just came off as so hateable. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it could be like an attempt at like subverting expectations. Like, oh no, this boyfriend sucks, and you know he turns around and you know
he's not
warms on the audience.
The worst. But
I don't think this movie had that much on its mind.
No, I think we're supposed. I think you're supposed to think he's a cool '80s dude.
Yeah,
and he just comes off as just the worst. He begins pressing her to stay. She doesn't really want to hear it. She said,
"Take a later flight."
She's like, "We decided." Which definitely doesn't sound like a mutual thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I remember.
Not that,
that
it needs
I
to be mutual.
Conversation. Thank you.
If she wants to leave, like that's her. You know, that's her choice.
It's her prerogative.
She asks if he'll take her to the cemetery to say goodbye to her parents.
Man, the night is full of fun activities.
I feel like the stage is set for just the worst last night together ever. It's like cold ribs, a trip to the cemetery, and a sound check.
The cold ribs are the standout in this situation.
Thank God for He-Man.
That's right.
Now, as they drive off, we see Tila. She's there surveying the scene from the bushes. This place, Robbie's, which we discussed, looks awesome. It was a real restaurant at the time that they had redressed to play Robbie's in the movie. And apparently, it is the same parking lot where the Rodney King beating took place some years later.
Woof.
That's just a reality check.
Just, all right, that's some trivia right there.
Yeah.
Wow.
I tried to cue up the beating tape recently, and you can't see anything.
No, you just see the headlights and...
It's awful.
The police violence.
Does the movie officially establish that this is taking place in California at any point?
Yes.
Okay. They say it?
Well, they say the parents are flying to Catalina. So I just assumed. And given the terrain in that shot, like I was just like, I feel like it's supposed to be in
though
California.
On first viewing, I will say I was just sure they were in Oklahoma or somewhere,
well,
with a cow, right?
Like, who has cows wandering
roaming
around?
Roaming free-range cows in the valley? But
you never know.
But there's a lot of palm trees also
exactly,
that we see. Yeah. But I did think for sure this was somewhere in the Midwest. Because who goes from California to Jersey?
Rich kids.
To reinvent myself.
She's doing a reverse LaRusso.
Oh, man.
So Tila hides in the bushes. She hears a noise. Quickly draws her blaster.
To kill.
She is ready to kill. It's Duncan.
It's her dad.
Which has that's the first time that it's revealed. Was that the case in the cartoon?
Yeah.
The Tila's man-at-arms daughter? Okay.
Yeah.
I had forgotten, and they were late to reveal that in the movie, I thought. So Tila says, you know, that he strayed far from his search area. And he says he was drawn from the smell of those sweet, sweet ribs.
An old soldier learns to follow his nose.
I don't blame him.
Yeah, same.
Tila seems concerned that they don't have time to stop for a meal, but Duncan says, well, we're not going to save the sorceress if we die of starvation.
That's logic.
Well, are you going to starve? I don't know how long 0.84 chromons is.
I feel like 0.8 is
long
like
enough to starve.
2 days.
Okay. That's close enough.
You got
to
keep
weak.
Up your strength.
Save your strength. Now, at this about this time, they spot Gwildor also hiding in the bushes there at the restaurant.
Behind the couple making out in their car.
Dude, and he's leering at them and sort of smacking his lips in a way that made me feel uncomfortable.
I love Duncan's, I was doing that before you were even born. It's like, gross, Dad.
Well, I would hope so, also. Anyway, Gwildor breaks out the grappling hook. He uses it to snag a bucket of food from the couple that's making out in the car. So they go over, they find Gwildor just stuffing his face. He says he was going to share it with them.
Bullshit.
And he's chugging that barbecue sauce, man.
That's so awesome.
In his beard or whatever it is.
It looks like me every time I visit Community Q. So
yes. That looked like Carolina style, didn't it? Like the vinegar-based
big
sauce.
Time, yeah.
I do love that it's just like it's an amalgam. It's just an assortment of meats.
It is a bucket of meat.
Chicken.
Meat. Meat on meat. Toasted meat on meat.
Chicken and ribs.
I really dig Billy Barty's performance in the movie, though.
Sure.
Like, I think he's having a blast.
He's the most committed actor in this outside of Frank Langella.
Yeah.
For sure.
Like, if there was ever a movie not to take too seriously, I feel like it was this one, and I feel like he was just having fun. you know, doing it. So I can totally vibe on that.
Yeah.
Now they're all, yeah, they're sorting their bucket of just assorted meat. Teela asks, why is the food on these little white sticks? And then she's appalled to find out that they're eating meat.
Yeah, Dad reveals it's a rib bone.
Hold on now. There's no way that Adam / He-Man would get the bulk he's got without eating, you know, you gotta eat muscles to get muscles.
I was wondering the same thing. Is like, what kind of society is Eternia?
Is like, she vegan? What, like, what's going on over here?
I mean,
here?
Clearly Duncan's like, I've eaten. Like, he knows what it is.
Has he been to other worlds? Has he been off world?
That's what I'm wondering. Is like Eternia, is there interstellar space travel? Is it sort of like Thundercats where you get to fly to other places? Is it Dune? Like, what's the deal? Like, what's Eternia's relationship with other planets?
It raised a million questions. Is eating meat unheard of on Eternia?
Yeah. Oh, apparently, yeah. Maybe.
Are they eating these weird boneless, fleshy creatures?
They're flora. They're like the fauna are just like flopping around. All their animals
like jellyfish. Anyway, yeah. She comments, "This is a barbaric world." I think Duncan gives her the advice: never think while you're hungry.
Good advice.
So Teela says, "We got to get back to searching for the cosmic key." Now, over at the cemetery, Julie is confiding in Kevin that she feels like it's her fault that her parents died. She says, you know, they were planning to go to the beach, but then she bailed on them so she could study.
So she could hang out with Kevin.
Is that?
Yeah, she says, I bailed.
No, I thought she said to study.
Yeah, but she hung out with Kevin.
Oh, I like that.
Which I love that dig. Like, she's basically like, well, that did it to hang out with you.
That gives a reason why she doesn't want to stay with him.
Yeah.
I thought, like, if they had been, like, fucking, you know, and the parents crashed their plane, then it would make sense that she couldn't look at him anymore.
Yeah, she was like, yeah, ditched him to hang out with your ass.
They were probably going to the fucking Catalina wine mixer, was what I was thinking from Step Brothers.
I like that they're just having this conversation now, by the way.
Yeah, we never have talked about this.
Buried for months, probably.
How long, the year on the tombstones was 86, so I don't know how early this is. If it's graduation time of 87...
Yeah.
It's been at least then 5 months or so.
It's the spring of junior year.
Is when they passed?
86.
So it's been a full year.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Kevin points out her parents wouldn't want her to blame herself, which is probably true.
Right.
Julie says she just wishes she could change things. Kevin says, that only happens in fairy tales. That is some industrial strength foreshadowing.
What?
Also, like, the worst possible thing you could ever say to someone at a cemetery.
Yeah, nothing changes.
Yeah, nothing ever changes.
Just internalize this. Deal with it.
We're late for my sound check.
We gotta get to the high school, babe.
So as they're going to leave, they stumble upon the cosmic key. It's like in a crater in the
beeping
cemetery.
Beeping and glowing and throw it up steam.
Yeah, how did shit wind up there? We don't quite know.
It's not for us to know.
They're both immediately, like, intensely happy.
Whoa!
And excited.
What the fuck is this thing?
She, wow! Like, I get because he's a douchebag who doesn't really care about her parents, but she was immediately, like, thrilled at finding this thing.
That's
whatever
it is. The quality of Gwildor's design.
The tone of the scene just changed on a dime.
Yeah.
Dumbass Kevin, he says it's a Japanese synthesizer.
Yeah, they accidentally hit the play button, so it starts making music and lighting up. And then immediately he's like, oh, yeah, I've seen this.
I did dig the sound that the cosmic key made. Like the yeah, it was actually kind of sweet. So Julie's like, well, we better give it to the caretaker. He's like, fuck no. He'd just keep it for himself. So Kevin logic is like, I should keep it for myself.
Yeah.
Like,
ain't that America?
We cut back to Eternia. Evil-Lyn is telling Skeletor that the cosmic key has been activated. That they've got a bearing on the location. How close? It's within a parsecion.
Okay.
Whatever the fuck that means. That's also just like straight Star Wars plagiarism, right? Parsecion. Anyway, Skeletor says, get a lock on that location and send a team of mercenaries. So
I think it's Parsec Eon, which even doesn't make even more sense. Because Parsec Eon, an eon?
Of parsecs?
That's the long...
It'd be a long way, right?
Anyway, yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Now, back on Earth, He-Man is kind of skulking around.
We finally... Where the fuck has He-Man been this whole time?
Missing, it's the most conspicuous-looking shit you can imagine.
He is in a residential area dressed like that.
He's a jacked, like, 6'4" dude with a cape.
a sword,
and a pair of bikini briefs. And he's like trying to blend in. Now, at the high school.
And that's it. That was all that He-Man was it. You get.
That was what we get for now. That's okay. Our dose of He-Man.
Thanks.
At the high school, Kevin is playing with his synthesizer while Julie looks bored.
Sounds right.
Kevin sucks. He's like a child.
I have to say, though, his setup is badass.
You were digging
insane.
It?
Yeah. It's a Fender Rhodes, and the Rhodes Chroma Polaris, which you can't find. Like, you can find the circuit board for it, like rebuilt circuit boards, but to find that keyboard, the one that's on top that he's playing on, is almost impossible to find.
So is he another rich kid?
Probably.
Or is he making bank?
He might be a hardworking musician.
His band Illusions.
That's a great 80s band name.
The director said that was the name of his high school band.
That's awesome. Illusions. Goddard, I love it.
Sounds like a strip club.
Sound checks are boring, by the way. Sound yes. checks fucking suck.
Well, Kevin's like, hey, Julie, listen to this. And then just play some dog shit.
But I think he's trying to play whatever the sound was he heard from.
Oh, is he already trying
key.
To riff that Tears for Fears? Which is a killer riff.
Yeah, it's badass.
What do you think? He says. She like goes along with it. Now he just grabs the cosmic key, starts to play it some more. It's generating this like kind of trippy light show up in the air, which I did dig that effect throughout.
I guess though, Goldor put some built-in speakers on that. I'm just like,
it has an integrated speaker apparently.
Yeah.
On Eternia, the baddies are like able to zero in on the location of the key now. This dude who looks like a middle management Destro.
Yeah.
Who's up
that's
on the,
awesome.
He's
dude.
Like got a silver like chrome dome.
That is awesome.
He's working the tracker.
Destro. That's amazing.
Skeletor asks Evil-Lyn if she's assembled the mercenaries, not noticing that they're standing right beside him already.
Yes, sir.
Like they are right there. Evil-Lyn introduces them. So we got Blade, who's basically human. Has a sort of a weird chin strap headpiece on.
He looks cool.
Chainmail.
I had the action figure of Blade.
Was he a real character?
No.
Or was he from the movie?
It was a movie set of action figures.
That's cool. Shit.
Were they more human proportions?
No, they were about the same size.
They were like just real bulky?
Yeah. But Blade was one of the ones I had because he had swords.
So this guy is played by the actor Anthony DeLongis, who played Ketchum in Roadhouse that we did recently. The dude who drives Bigfoot. In Roadhouse. But he was like a real swordsman, apparently, and he like choreographed all the sword fight stuff for the film.
Oh, great job. Way to go.
Grade A.
Also, like, apparently that costume, the chainmail, was like the real chainmail, not the Bennett from Commando.
Like 50
pound costume that he's wearing. Yeah. We had Salrod, this reptilian sort of looking thing with armor and a helmet, who had, I thought, by far the coolest look.
Easily. Yeah.
Probably the sack in his neck that would expand.
That was badass.
And
that effect was cool.
Yeah.
Also, the name was probably just scammed off of Tolkien.
Sarad, yeah.
We had the Beast Man. She calls him not Beast Man. I don't know,
the
but
Beast
I.
Man.
He's basically Wolf Man.
I was so excited when he debuted though.
But he.
Yeah.
He looked way different. It wasn't Beast Man was in the cartoons.
He
looked very different.
Orange with like a blue face.
Was he furry?
Yeah, he was furry, but he didn't look like that guy.
Okay. This was basically just, I felt like a Wolfman costume. And they're like, give us a werewolf look.
Yeah.
Whatever. And then Karg, this kind of diminutive monster with the insane, like, white mullet.
And he's got like a jagged hook.
He's got a hook.
A hand. Like
I think we assume that He-Man probably, he battled He-Man and lost that hand.
Maybe.
I think the same for Blade's missing eye.
I have to be honest with you guys. I sort of feel like these were all character costumes that they just had laying around.
Totally.
And they were like.
Definitely.
Right, lazy.
Let's put that guy in all the chainmail from some other night movie we were working on.
But I dug Karg's like whole weird vibe that he had, to be honest. Like he was
his furs and things.
Everything
wearing,
about him, like he kind of worked for me. Whoever that actor was really doing it for me. So Skeletor tells him, bring He-Man back before moonrise. Tells him, go down to Earth, get the key, kill the others if you need to, but bring He-Man back alive. Whatever. He doesn't want He-Man to be like a martyr figure or some shit.
Right.
They're standing in a completely different order than they were moments ago as he's like addressing them, but that's neither here nor there.
It's fine.
Says, open the door, do not fail me, sends their asses through the portal or whatever.
Right.
Now, back at the high school, Kevin's continuing to marvel at the cosmic key. He wants to take it to his friend Charlie, who runs the instrument shop
on the night that his girlfriend is leaving town. On the night his girlfriend, who he ostensibly doesn't want to leave town, is supposed to leave town.
Can't wait till tomorrow.
Yeah.
Gotta show Charlie now.
We gotta take it to Charlie.
Isn't the prom supposed to be starting soon as well?
It can't be that night.
The prom?
Do you think it is?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Later on, like, prom goers are there.
Yeah, I don't know why he'd be doing sound check the night before.
I don't know. I think it's like weird things about high school and just like leave your equipment set up overnight.
I mean, it would make more sense actually, I think, but it is supposed to be prom night, I also think. Note that Kevin was also not planning to take Julie to prom, apparently. He's like, no, I gotta play. Illusion's gotta play. Man the punch bowl or whatever. Julie tells him go ahead. She'd rather be alone to say goodbye to the empty high school gym.
I mean, you do you, girlfriend. Spend some time with your memories, whatever.
This is where she says she's going to miss graduation, which I guess does mean they're seniors.
Right.
Like, he definitely seems older. He could be. Could he not be a graduate and she's still a senior?
Maybe. Yeah, I guess so. It's possible.
I don't know. If they're still in high school, it raises so many
questions.
But
how is he making enough money gigging?
He's like a rich kid, I think. Yeah. That's my take.
Yeah.
Has she just been living by herself?
That's what I'm saying.
Since the parents died?
Yeah, she's been living in the house. I guess her parents left her a bundle. They must have, because they were rich. They must have left her shit tons of money. I would think
if she's a minor, if she was 17 back then, how would she have...
Yeah, I mean...
She's supporting herself off the Robbie's rib wages?
I don't know.
She'd be shunted off to some family somewhere else.
Yeah. She'd have to have an adult, I think.
Maybe she's got an uncle that's a lawyer out in Jersey that's sure. taking care state of this lawyer. Shit for her. I don't know.
Same one who sabotaged that plane.
Yeah.
So Kevin is...
It took a dark turn.
Kevin is hesitant to leave, but he does it anyway.
Yeah.
Leaves her there alone. She's like desperately would rather be alone than around him.
Yeah.
He's being real pushy, like, you wait right here. Don't go anywhere. Like, whatever. Julie looks at her locket where she's got pictures of the parents in there. She hears a commotion off screen out in the lobby. We see the mercenaries and a few miscellaneous soldiers have popped through the portal. Julie thinks maybe it's Kevin playing a prank on her.
Or Carl the janitor.
Play a prank on a student.
That'd be fucking twisted. But anyway.
Carl's an asshole.
Out in the lobby, we got the custodian, Carl. He pops out to investigate the commotion, and he just gets dealt with.
Hey, you can't be here.
Wolfman, roughs him up. It's odd that the custodian's wearing a letter jacket.
Right.
He went to school.
Creepy.
He went to Central
High. Oh, no doubt.
Still living his
He's like Al Bundy. Past. Like, I scored four touchdowns in a high school football game.
Four touchdowns.
It's a state record. They throw Carl through the door and burst into the gym area.
Right.
Julie runs to take cover behind the stage. I feel like if this happened to me, my reaction would be like, just what is this LARPing bullshit? Like, do you assume there's real creatures and monsters?
This is the point where I get extremely disappointed in the scope of this movie, because it's like you go from Universal, Eternia, magic stuff that doesn't make any sense, but at least it can tickle your imagination a little bit, to dudes in costumes walking around a high school gym.
It's like Dragon Con. Dragon Con.
Yeah, it feels a little cheap.
So Sourod and Beastman just start shooting at her. They start a fire in the gym. I love that the theme of the prom seems to just be anywhere but here. Because there was Big Ben and Eiffel Tower, pyramids and palm trees and a pagoda.
Yeah.
There's the Leaning Tower of Pisa is in there. Fucking weird, dude. Karg says stop shooting. She might be able to lead us to the key, you guys.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
He's the brains. Now, as they surround her, Julie, she scurries under the stage.
I love the shot of Beastman tearing through the streamers and tinsel. The upshot of him as he's waving violently at the tinsel. What?
Blade is just stabbing at her blindly, through the stage. Right. So I think the orders of don't kill her have just gone out the window. Also, they're back to kill mode. She throws that bucket of ammonia or whatever in Wolfman's face. Or Beastman's face. And then escapes. Outside, He-Man hears Julie screaming for help. He runs to her. Julie flees into the junkyard.
Where are we? Is anyone
no place safer.
Is anyone else dubious that the junkyard is right next door to Central High School.
I don't know. This is like Backlot USA.
Oh, man. Guys, I love a good Backlot. And, especially one that like uses the same sets over and over again.
That's rad.
I'm a fan.
So the baddies just follow her into the junkyard. They're searching for her in there. He-Man finds her and scares her, but he convinces her that he's here to help. He was like, he had a weird delivery. It was just that, don't be afraid.
Well, it's because it sounds like he can't speak English. Like, English is a second language, which maybe it was for
Dolph Lundgren. I think he had a Swedish accent.
Yeah,
he had a pretty heavy accent at the time.
Yeah. He's like, don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. I won't hurt you.
I won't hurt you.
He's just a big jack dude in his underwear who just grabbed her, though. But it was like that dude we talk about every Schwarzenegger movie. Has a scene where Arnold just grabs a woman and tells her, don't worry, I'm not going to hurt you.
I'm not going to hurt you.
This imposing guy.
It's like huge. Yeah,
you're right. Cool. That's fine.
So for some reason, he picks her up and carries her and lays her down in a pile of garbage. Yeah, like,
and gives her a gun.
Tells her, here's a gun. Defend yourself. Why did he pick her up?
I don't know.
I don't know either,
not,
man.
Not like, come over here and sit down. I will set you amongst the garbage.
So, he easily takes out Stormtrooper number one and grabs the dude's blaster and then just starts laying waste.
Again, the weapons are all so big and clearly very heavy. It's like he's struggling
wielding them.
Oh, God.
So, Saurad's about to shoot He-Man, but Julie notices and she shoots Saurad, whose armor maybe saved him.
I guess. I thought he shot the gun out of his hand or something.
She shot the gun out of his hand, or he shot the gun out of He-Man's?
He shot the gun out of He-Man's hand, and then she shot Saurad, and it like banked and caught him, and he fell or something.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't know what's happening. But yeah, Beastman grabs He-Man. They start to grapple a little bit. He-Man knocks him down. Blade pops out, gives a little display of swordsmanship.
I've waited a long time for this.
See, I think He-Man took that eye.
Yeah, a lot of unwritten history.
There's a lot of backstory
implied,
here. Waiting for the prequels still. He-Man, he bests Blade with ease, and then he beats up Saurad. He stops Karg from taking Julie by just throwing his sword at him, which there's really no reason that would stop Karg from just grabbing her, though. Still, it's like, the sword! Let me just
run for
it.
We don't know what the
sword's
power is.
Now, just then, Duncan and Teela show up. They run in shooting. The four mercenaries, they retreat. He-Man tells Teela and Duncan to follow those baddies because they must have a portal back to Eternia.
Right.
Which is a good point, right?
Yeah.
Is the portal just open in the high school somewhere? It has been.
It opened in the lobby.
They don't have a key to get back.
Nope.
So I guess the portal is just sitting there open. Anyway, He-Man tells Julie he needs her help. Cut to Charlie's music shop. Kevin has arrived. He's just Jimi Hendrix is blasting, which caught me off guard.
Yeah.
So I'm like, wait, yeah, this is a weird music choice. Like, you have a good song, like a classic rock that seems like it probably would have been expensive.
Charlie's got good taste.
Well, yeah.
But it's like looped. It's like the same like 10 seconds. Cool.
Do you remember when... Remember when Kevin said he was going to be gone for 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Like, Jesus. However long ago that was. Charlie says to him, I heard you were good last night at Club Zero. And Kevin's like, thanks. No, man, we're going to be better tonight. See, so prom is tonight.
At the
prom. You're going to rock this high school prom. A waste of time, though, the viewer's time.
Just
weird lines that amount to nothing.
We're supposed to respect him as a musician now.
His chops. I guess. Charlie thinks he's good.
Yeah.
Kevin, he shows him the cosmic key. Charlie just immediately bullshitting. It's like, oh, I've seen these before. It's Japanese.
Bullshit.
Is he just a pathological liar? Like, I don't know why he leaps straight to lying about it.
Oh, Charlie.
But they have the same line of thought that it comes from Japan.
All the best stuff comes from Japan.
That's right. This is the 1980s.
Kevin assures Charlie that he's wrong and shows him how it works. Charlie's mind is blown, though, by the light show. Dude, Charlie wants to buy it off of him. Says, and he wants to know where he found it. I've never seen anything like it, he says, which is just immediately flies in the face of his, I've seen these before. Kevin tells him it was in a crater, and I found it in a crater in the cemetery.
I love Kevin's honesty.
He said, I hoped you would know what it was. Kevin fiddles with it some more, and Charlie remarks, Oh, Mr. Pitch Perfect.
Can confirm he did hit a D sharp.
Oh, yeah? Are you Pitch Perfect?
No.
As well?
No.
I thought you were for some reason.
I have good relative pitch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Explain to the audience what means pitch perfect.
Yeah, having perfect pitch means that you hear a note and you immediately know what that note is.
We know that's just going to be important later in the film, apparently. Because otherwise, there's really no reason for it. Now, does it mean you can memorize something from hearing it a time or
not
two?
Not necessarily, but you would know exactly like
you could remember note the notes, maybe.
Right.
Okay. Now, the pair, they notice a flurry of fire trucks zooming past the shop. Charlie turns on his humongous radio that he has. It looked like it had a TV built into it, maybe.
Yeah,
it was like one
thing,
of those. They hear there's a fire at the high school. Kevin's thinking, oh, shit, that's where I abandoned Julie.
On her last night in town.
On her last night in town.
What's going to happen?
Kevin runs out of there to investigate, and that's where we will leave you.
Oh, my gosh. The suspense is really ramping up.
This movie keeps you on the edge of your seat.
Is he in this movie?
We saw him
for 2 minutes.
In the last 20 minutes, he's appeared in about 2 minutes of the film.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Kyle, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
Good. Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm great.
We all made it.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to our friends on the Last of the Action Hero Podcast Network.
That's
right. For listening.
We hope you guys will tune in for episode 3, that you won't leave us alone with this hot garbage, as my friend Andrew Miller would say, and good journey.
We'll be back.